Hello, guys. Welcome back to Club 30. I'm your host, Henrik Lundqvist. I'm here with my friend, Jay Liddell. How are we doing today, Jay?
Doing great. A little nervous for this one.
Oh, yeah?
I just didn't know how to get ready for this guest, you know?
He feels like a New Yorker, but he's not from New York.
No.
But he's been part of, I feel like, New York history.
For culture.
Culture, yeah. For the past 20 years.
Yeah.
Kenan Thompson.
It's a one chance at it, you know, like even if you've done it well all week, it doesn't matter. You know, like if you fuck it up during a live show, then that's what everybody remembers. Like that's what they mark down as a win or a loss. And that helps the decisions of calling you back every summer. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm blessed to find new things. Like I'm blessed to find, you know, Coach Prime or be involved in the George Washington Weights and Measurements sketch. You know what I mean? Like that sketch was brilliant. So. Mm-hmm. If I was not on the show anymore, I wouldn't have been in the sketch. Like, yeah. That's just kind of how it goes.
Do you have a favorite SNL actor or guest over the years?
I mean, I grew up with like Dan Aykroyd, Chris Farley, Sandler, Eddie Murphy at the very beginning. But so I was really, really into SNL growing up because there's nothing to do on the farm. You know, so I'd stay up really late until 11:30 and watch that. And then when life took over, sports and college and that, I kind of paused.
Yeah.
And I didn't really follow the show until kind of getting back to New York.
Me, Chris Farley, it really stands out. I mean, I can't watch one clip with that guy and not laugh.
Right.
Just his timing and energy, even seeing him being interviewed on talk shows was the best.
Right. He's hilarious. And I think that we're older and now that, you know, that era kind of concluded at the end of the 90s. And since then, Kenan has been, you know, he's the longest tenured cast member ever.
Yeah.
And so that's crazy when you think about what his company is, you know, who's alongside of him. And I think he's the only one that was born after kind of all the original cast members had left the show, you know, so he brings this fresh new take on SNL that has been amazing to watch.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one. Yeah, let's get into it.
Yeah.
Everyone, here's Kenan Thompson. He's the longest tenured cast member in SNL history. Some people say this guy invented the knuckle puck. Welcome to Club 30, actor, comedian, Kenan Thompson.
Thank you very much,
welcome,
man.
Welcome.
Getting intro by legends out here. I love it. Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Great to have you here.
Yeah.
It was good to see you.
Over 20 years. That's how long you've been part of the SNL crew now.
Yeah.
Was that something you dreamed of, stepping into that role?
Not at all. I mean, you dream of getting on the show, you know, hopefully one day or, you know, being around it in some capacity. But it seemed like such a dream, like this will never happen. Even when we were on Nickelodeon and kind of doing similar work and being around, you know, like Chris Farley came to the show and did, you know, an episode with us and stuff.
Uh-huh.
But still, you know what I mean? It still seemed like a far-fetched, one in a million kind of lottery ticket kind of thing or whatever. So to actually get the job and then keep the job for a long time has just been crazy.
But so it was on your mind, though, already as a teenager because you were on Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
You did different shows. But it was a goal.
Yeah, I was, you know, lifelong fan too. Like, you know, I think I was real little when Hot Tub came out. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So like I remember like watching my dad watch Eddie Murphy doing his thing and stuff like that. And by the time I was middle schooling, that's when like the Sandler and, you know, Farley and Chris Rock years and stuff, like that was when it started to become my show, basically, in that era. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was on my mind, but more so like a fan.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I didn't even know where it was, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'd never really been in New York like that. I didn't know they shot in a building, you know, it's just like on the 8th floor kind of thing. You know?
So what do you remember that audition? It's a long time ago, but what do you remember?
I remember it vividly. It was a nightmare for me because I had to do stand-up. Like, a lot of, like, you know, black comedians are mostly stand-ups. There's, you know, a few that are in, you know, the improv houses like the Groundlings and such. Mm. But, you know, a lot more that are stand-ups, I guess. So it was just like a cattle call, and the majority kind of wins, like the majority kind of style, I guess. You know, so they could see who can do what in the beginning. It was all pretty much like stand-up. So I went to the stand-up New York, it was called even. I was still there, like comedy club on the Upper West Side. Had to do like 5 minutes, never done stand-up before. I was an actor, so I wasn't like, I was confidently naive, but yeah.
Was there not like a live audience?
Full audience. Yeah. Tiny stage like the size of this table. So it was really all about, you know, your words, basically. Yeah. And I wasn't used to that at all. People smoking and shit, you know, like they couldn't care less unless you garnered their attention. I didn't really know how to do that. So it was just terrifying. But then like a day later, I got a call back and I was in the studio. So I was in front of cameras and stuff. I was used to that. So that one felt a little better. But, you know, still, I didn't have material, basically. Like, I was used to performing scripts, you know what I'm saying? So I didn't have, like, a don't you hate airplanes or whatever the fuck, you know what I'm saying? And then a week went by. I went home, back to L.A. I was living in L.A. at the time, and I didn't hear anything for, like, a week. And then they finally called, and it was like, all right, we want you to try one more time. Stand up again at the Laugh Factory in L.A. or whatever. Now we want 10 minutes, you know what I mean, kind of thing. It was, you know, it was a headache, but I made it through. Like, I remember being, like, dehydrated, like, drinking out of the bathroom sink because it was, like, I didn't want to go back and forth to the bar and be a distraction or whatever. So, but I just couldn't quench my thirst. I was bugging, like, literally bugging. I had auditioned for lots of things, but this was SNL, you know what I mean? This is the once-in-a-lifetime kind of, it's the going shot. To stay with you if you don't get it kind of thing. You know what I mean? So, like, I've never been that nervous in my life, but... My one good friend was in the audience, so I just performed straight to my buddy. You know what I mean? Nice. Just making each other laugh kind of thing and ended up getting it.
And wow. It makes me think of, you know, relating to an athlete. You dream of something for a very long time. Now you get this opportunity. You go to training camp or you're playing this big game and the trick is to just stay so present, right?
Stay
and not
present.
Think about the outcome, not think about what's going to happen if I do good, do bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How do you stay in the moment and just do what you do?
Yeah, it's tough.
It's tough. And you learn, obviously, through experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that really is the trick. When big game or for you there, like a big audition, how do you perform and stick with the process? We always talk about stick with the process. That's what you need to focus at.
Sure, but you don't really know that when you're the first audition or the first ID camp. You're too young to appreciate.
Not at all. Nike tries to tell you, you know what I mean? Just do it. You know, you kind of just got to get out there and do it. Like, otherwise, you'll never know. Right. There's no way to give you the confidence or give you the courage beforehand, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, as a parent, that's the worst thing. You have to watch your child like, I can't do this for you. You know what I mean? Like, you have to do it, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's the proudest moment when they actually overcome, of course. But I would love to just give them all the tools and all the anything, you know what I mean? Like, courage and, you know, confidence and skill sets and whatnot. But it's like, no, you have to sharpen those tools yourself and jump off those diving boards into the deep end. You know what I mean? And, like, start swimming, like, straight up.
But I want to get back to SNL. And for you, you know, at what point did you feel, okay, this is home, I belong here? Mm-hmm. Did it take a couple months, years? Like,
it was years. You know, they invite you back every season. So every summer they have the option. You sign like an overall kind of like first 7 year kind of stretch where they set the numbers basically, you know, pretty much the same for everybody in the first 7 years, unless you just become a movie star and then they have to renegotiate or whatever.
Yeah.
But usually it's 7 year contract where they option you every summer, basically. So coming from, like, I'd been living in LA or whatever and, like, doing the actor hustle out there, you know, I had, like, one foot in and one foot out of New York for, like, 3-4 years until I felt like, oh, okay.
A little stability.
Like, like, around 5, and I started, like, getting my own ideas turned into, like, sketches that actually made the show as opposed to things that, like, fall by the wayside for whatever reason. Whether it's table read fall-offs or dress rehearsal, like, just this close, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like, about, like, 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a
while.
Does
it feel like your show now? I mean, everybody talks about it as your show now. But for you, like, given...
No, I mean, I'm definitely the vet there, you know, and it doesn't stress me. The only, like, I sing the warm-up song. That stresses me more than doing the show at this point, you know? Like, just because it's, to me, it's a little... like forced karaoke because like they're coming to see a comedy show and then we hop up there and like sing a song and they just have to take it. And like, I think it's good, but like, I hope they think it's good. Like they clap. So I just, it's just a part of like, you know, the showbiz, like presenting a show kind of like setting the tone, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Musical theater kind of tone. And, you know, kind of like giving them a little taste of the cast before it's televised or something like that. Like,
do you get nervous?
Every single time.
Awesome.
Like every single, and I sing it twice, you know, every Saturday, like dress rehearsal and the live show. Like, you know, that's how we open the show, you know.
Yeah.
But it's my comfort zone. Like, I'm not a, opera singer. I'm not a trained singer, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I sung in musical theater growing up and like church choir. But like, yeah, like, I'm not an R&B singer. Well, I'm not T-Pain.
Is that what makes you nervous, singing or the actual show? Okay, we're going live, the light goes on, and it's that, game time.
That singing is what makes me singing, nervous. Really. Stand-up makes me nervous, yes, but acting and being a performer is kind of my wheelhouse. So like, I get excited for that.
Yeah.
Like, I
call it pregame, but for you, it's pre-show routine.
It's mostly pacing. You know what I mean? Like, you just feel it. Like, you feel the time coming, and I just can't sit still. So like, I have to go usually get dressed for the warm up. Like, it's a whole nother little outfit, or get your makeup done. You know what I mean? Like, last minute checks or whatever. And I'm always finished like 10 minutes early. So I'm just like standing there in the hall, like just staring at it. You know what I'm saying? Like, just waiting on it. Like, call me out there, you know, like, I'm just like, I'm here, yeah. You know, like, yeah. Waiting on the flag, basically.
Like, when you were a kid, did you have a particular idol on the show, which is like, this guy does it all. This is the Hall of Fame for me.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in the black household growing up, Eddie was the king, you know what I mean? Like, untouchable, because he did it for a short amount of time, but he did it long enough to where he was dedicated. Like, it wasn't like he was there for a year, like right. Chevy or whatever. He was there for like almost like 3.5 or whatever. And in that time was a giant movie star at the same time, and then had to just move on. You know what I mean? So like, that was always something to aspire to, because it didn't seem like he just came to like fuck it off or use it. You know what I mean? Like, he was really contributing. Him and Piscopo were tight and stuff like that. So that was cool. And as the eras went along, different casts come in and stuff like that. So I loved a lot of different comics. I mean, I think Farley was definitely one of my favorites, just because he represented the big dudes in a different kind of fashion. Like, he could fall down, but he could also be really smart, you know? Mm. So, yeah.
Yeah. What's the schedule like when you start airing all the shows? Say, like, Monday, do you start prepping Monday for Saturday's show? And do you all get together with the new host? Or
it's how does it work? It's a 6-day week, yeah. Monday, we have the pitch meeting. Basically, we're in later in the day kind of thing. You know, it's a night schedule, basically.
Yeah.
Ex-cocaine schedule. But yeah, like around 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, we all gather in Lauren's office and sit on the floor, and the host is there, and we all go around the room and pitch an idea or two or whatever that we're thinking about, like whether or not we're actually going to write it. Most of the time, it's just for a reaction in the room, basically. But that lasts for like 40-ish minutes, and then we're done. You can either start writing or set your meetings for tomorrow, which is Tuesday, which is the main writing night. And that night goes for forever, because the deadline is Wednesday morning at like 11. So people sleep in the office, or some people finish early, whatever it is. You know, the legends where everybody would just, you know, burn the midnight oil till the next day and like never sleep and blah, blah, blah. But I got kids, you know what I'm saying? Right. I've been getting out of there at midnight for like the last 10 years at least. So that is for the younger crowd, I think. And then Wednesday's a table read at like 2 in the afternoon, 4 in the afternoon, something like that. It's like 4 hours. Kind of thing.
And by Wednesday, do you have a sense like, oh, this is good or this is dog shit?
By Wednesday night, we kind of know, basically, because now we know who can read and who can't, like host-wise kind of thing, and what we need to do to like cater to that and make sure that they have the best experience possible. I mean, it's a lot to ask for people to just be like, you know, how high does your education go kind of thing. Like, you know, you don't want to do that. You just like let it be discovered.
You and kind then of give we them adjust the benefit accordingly. Of the doubt, and then you wind it back.
Yeah.
So is there a stereotype over like on the ideal host for you? Like, do you just think, oh, I have an athlete coming on, they're going to be garbage or great?
I mean, versus a musician, honestly, like, the more fish out of water, the better. You know, like, we love athletes, like, power, like, anybody weird allows us to discover various topics, you know, as opposed to performers where it's like, oh, this, we all could already kind of know what they do well. Melissa McCarthy will come in and she'll have 4 ideas already, and there's only 6 in the show, you know what I mean? So like more than half the show will just be done already, you know?
Right.
And like, thank God she's genius, but it doesn't offer a lot of opportunity for new thought, you know what I mean? Or new people to get their things on.
Right. Or the awkwardness tougher. That is funny by
you
definition.
Know, for sketch, you know, like sketch can be so abstract as, you know, as you want it to be. And that's when it's fun. So like athletes bring that out.
Is there anybody that came in and really surprised you? Like
Bad Bunny
so many ideas and like.
Bad Bunny just killed it, you know, for like a second, you know, language, like English being a second language kind of thing. Like it seemed like it was a mountain to climb, you know, and he really did a great job. Like, he wasn't nervous about it, and he wasn't shy about it either.
And so hosts are with you from table read on? On Wednesday?
They're there for Monday.
Monday.
Yeah. Like, we pitch to the host. Yeah. On Monday. And then Tuesday, they have meetings with some writers and see what everybody's thinking or offering what voices maybe they can do. You know what I mean? And then, yeah, Thursday, Friday's rehearsal. Friday's like a pre-tape day. Yeah. So you have rehearsal and pre-tapes going at the same time. So Friday's kind of chaotic. And then, yeah, we're in at noon on Saturday until the show at 11:30 at night.
What a wild experience. Yeah. Let me talk about post-show routine. So I have a buddy who used to write for SNL for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And he always told me that the responsibility for the after party rotated among cast members.
Oh, yeah.
Is that still happening?
No. Somebody, I think Wally kind of grabbed it, our cue card guy. I think he grabbed it and was like, I'll just handle this. Yeah, week after week.
Yeah.
Yeah, that started falling through the cracks a little bit. I started throwing parties, and then it was kind of like thankless a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, some people would get left outside or some shit. It was just like too much because SNL rolls deep. Like, every time we have like those little after parties at like a restaurant or whatever, it'll be quiet at first, and then all of a sudden it's 500 people there. You know what I mean? And they can never handle the rush, like ever. Try to prepare them every single time. They're always overwhelmed within like 40 minutes, you know what I mean? And then like nobody's getting drinks, nobody's getting food.
Just that half the week prepare for the show, half the week prepare for the after party.
You know what I mean? Trying to tell the world, like, yo, get ready. So it's the same thing for like the after party when it was at like clubs and like ropes and shit like that. People would be getting left outside because it was just like all of a sudden there was just a mob scene.
Right.
So I was like, nah, I'm good on that. Somebody else can handle that.
So away from the show, like when you're out meeting people, do people expect you to be funny all the time?
I think so. Yeah. Some people do. Like, I guess.
Is that exhausting? Or is just.
No, because they learn pretty quick. You know what I mean? Like, within the first couple, like, interactions, like, oh, no, he's like an actual adult or just chilling or he's different from how he is. Like, however they take it, I think they notice pretty immediately. Some are happy and some kind of want to hear a joke.
Right.
And I let a lot of people down with that, I think.
So how often do you think about material, jokes, characters?
When they strike, I try to write them down because I can use that. You know what I mean? But I don't really, I can't sit down and be like, all right, what do I want to write? I have to have an inspiration before, like at least a day or so. Like on the day, it'll never come. Mm-hmm. Maybe it'll come, but it won't be anything substantial. You know what I mean? Like. Usually when something like sparks me funny, I'm like, oh, wow. And I write that down and it's at any given moment throughout the week.
Yep.
A lot of the times it's on Sunday and it would have worked great for that last show. You know what I'm saying? Yep. But like, whatever. You try to just bank things for a similar host in the future or whatever it is kind of thing. But pressure of in the moment is a little too much for me.
How about when you meet people like celebrities, especially, do you pay attention to how they act, what they say, in case that would come back and it's like, oh, that would be great material. Do you know what I mean? Do you scan them a little bit?
If they're characters, like if they have an accent or anything like that, like yours is coming out now, so I'll know if somebody is playing you well or not kind of thing. Like, but my buddy Daryl is like that. He like a real precise impressionist kind of thing. I'm more of an actor, so my awareness of an impression is within like 3 seconds of watching them on YouTube. I'm like, Clarence Thomas, what does he sound like? You know what I mean? And I like watch a clip and I'm like, oh, he's just a nerd from wherever the fuck. Man, that's my take on him. You know what I mean? Yeah. But like Daryl, when he was doing, I think Trump back in the day, no, it was Bill Clinton. When he like went and sat with Bill Clinton like for a half a day or whatever, studied his mannerisms and shit like that. Real and that's method, why he was like really nailing him like that. So,
And do you have a buddy or somebody that you used as a sounding board? Like, hey, is this funny? Like, what do you think of this? Or do you trust for that stuff?
I try to not do that to people because, like, a lot of stand-ups do that to people. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Like, if you talk to a stand-up comic, you're like, are we having a conversation? Or are you just, like,
testing shit?
Yeah, right.
Right.
So, like, I'll save it for, you know, just the table and see. This will just be our test for, because it's, you know, not necessarily a force test, but it's everybody's gathered here for this reason kind of thing. So it doesn't seem like...
Yeah.
Disingenuine, you know, like I like being able to just talk to people, and if we laugh, you know what I mean. But like, hate to be
a human being,
you know, like you ever notice like how slow Mazdas are sometimes? I don't know, like, not really. Yeah. What are we talking
why
about?
Why is he talking about Mazdas?
But when you talk about comedy, is it the material? Is it timing?
Mm-hmm.
Like, to you, what's the most important thing with comedy? Is it the timing?
That's tough because it takes a kind of perfect storm there's a lot of factors for things to kind of go right, if you will, especially on a televised version of things. So you have sound effects, you have camera cuts, you have this and that, you know what I mean? There's a lot going on. But as far as just a good solid laugh, yeah, it's you know, performing it, timing. But what you're saying is, yeah, subject matter is critical. Like the greatest comics are usually very, very smart people. You know, mm-hmm. if you watch Seth, who's brilliant, like he might be one of the smartest people walking. Colbert too, you know what I mean? Like these people are really, really strong at being funny because they're so smart and they curate things and they storytell in a certain kind of way and blah, blah, blah kind of thing.
And how much do you feed off of crowd or the person you're doing the scene
with? Oh, yeah.
Is that a lot? And you go off script because of whatever he's saying or how much the crowd is laughing?
I'm definitely listening to everything. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I have to, like, I don't like cutting short laughs. Like, if they're really laughing at something, like, let them have it. You know, like, I know I got a line coming up, but, like, they're enjoying something, you know? Like, I'm just going to be like, hey, cut that out because I got something to say next right. or whatever yeah, kind of thing.
The Honda Accord joke's coming
you
next.
You know, like, I love that. Yeah. I'm like, oh, this is going great. Like, good for the writer, good for, you know, good for the show. Like, I'm a fan. So I let things, you know, kind of milk out as long as possible until it starts to get quiet. And then you got to move things on or whatever.
Right, yeah.
And then, yeah, if you're, you know, a fan of your coworker, it makes it all the more sweeter, especially if they're doing the lifting and I kind of just have my, you know, front row seat or whatever, kind of just watching and, you know, being a supportive kind of person.
Can that become a goal to have your, whoever you're doing the scene with to break character because you make him laugh so much?
Oh, yeah.
Like you try to make him laugh so much that he loses it a little bit.
That was the game when we did Scared Straight and we knew Bill liked to be played with like that, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? So the game became like, can we break Bill? Like who's going to break Bill either the most or the fastest? So between like me, Sudeikis, Bobby Moynihan and Sandberg, we were all like, you know, aiming at him in different kind of ways throughout that sketch. It was fun. And then especially by the time we had done it 5 or 6 times, it was just, let me stick my finger in his ear. You know right. what I mean? Like, let's just see what we can do. And I wouldn't move on from the moment until I broke him. You know what I'm saying? Like, that became the game.
I'm thinking as an athlete, you train every day. You kind of repeat same drills over mm-hmm. and over to become better and better. As a comedian, how do you get funnier? Like, what's, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I have my plan to get better as a hockey player.
Mm-hmm.
And you train for months and you skate and we watch tape. How do you become funnier? And how does it work?
I don't necessarily, like, review too hard, but I definitely notice everything. You know what I mean? And, like, some things just happen. Some things I'm like, shit, I heard my voice crack or I heard this, that, and the other, blah, blah, blah. And then some things can be improved upon, but our show is live, so there's no get back. So you got to let that go and just be like, all right, next time, if I write something, maybe I won't write so many sound effects so it won't be so complicated and I can just control everything. I'll control all the cues. I'll control, like, when the band kicks in. Like, they'll all be cued off of me because if it's my sketch, it's my timing. You know what I'm saying? So it frustrates me when things are in other people's hands. You just get too nervous, like letting people have control over the fate of your sketch kind of thing.
So when does that happen? Just what you're talking about, the analyzing what happened. Is that after the show or Sunday morning or?
A bit of both. It's during the experience of it all. And then, yeah, it rolls over into Sunday where you're just like hyper analyzing. And then Monday, you know, it's a new host. So you kind of got to let it go by then. Sure. But yeah, in the moment and, you know, Sunday, you're kind of processing a lot.
And what about all the evolution to Hank's earlier point? Like, how do you keep growing? Is it just experience and being in the moment?
I think writing will lead you to that kind of growth, you know, like writing leads to seeking out more knowledge mm-hmm. because you got to write something. So like, what am I going to write? Maybe mm-hmm. I need to go learn about something, or it might push you to just be more social. Stand-ups, I think, get better by being around each other and being around, you know, testing a thought basically yeah. and constantly kind of doing that back and forth or whatever. And yeah, just by doing it, you know, over and over, like you said, just practicing this, that, and the other. But our practice is at a high level and it's a one chance at it, you know, yeah. like even if you've like done it well all week, it doesn't matter. You know, like if you fuck it up during a live show, then that's what everybody remembers, you know, right. and like that's what they mark down as a win or a loss. And that helps the decisions of calling you back every summer. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it's a lot on like the young cast members' mind. For me, it's like, this is season 21, and like, I'm blessed to find new things. Like, I'm blessed to find, you know, Coach Prime, you know mm-hmm. what I mean, and stuff like that, or be involved in the George Washington Weights and Measurements sketch, you know what I mean? Like, that sketch was brilliant. So, mm-hmm. if I was not on the show anymore, I wouldn't have been in the sketch. Like, yeah, that's just kind of how it goes.
Yeah. 21 years, obviously, the world is different now. How you do comedy might be a little different. Have your approach changed a little bit just because of, I don't know, are people more sensitive these days? Like what you can joke about and not? And
yeah, I mean, the approach is pretty much the same. Like my sense of humor is kind of my starting place basically with most ideas. It's like if something struck me funny, it's like, all right, so like let me back up and see how to put this into like a 10-page journey for people that weren't just sitting next to me on the couch when I noticed something funny, right? And then, yeah, the way you word things, adjectives, there's a lot of new sensibilities to a lot of different words now. So you got to be careful. And you learn that when you say something and it gets a groan or it gets nothing. And you thought it was going to get something.
Right.
Basically, it's like, oh, snap. Like, I guess I'm behind the time.
It feels like comedy used to be a more protected art form.
It definitely wasn't as detrimental on both sides of things. You know what I mean? Like, there's real life victims and then there's real career victims as well. You know, yeah. Like people just saying the wrong things or being insensitive and it's just exiting themselves out the door, basically. So it's a high time for responsibility, that is. And that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, not a bad thing at all. Yeah.
It makes doing comedy hard.
Yeah, I was just thinking about, you know, you mentioned Dave earlier and like what he's been through.
You know, and he's one of those last voices that's like that. Like it's the comedian's job to talk shit or whatever. And, you know, unfortunately, at the same time, you have certain oppressed kind of cultures out there that like are voicing back, basically. You know what I mean? And like because of, like I said, like real life victims, you know, like if everybody was able to like take a joke and we could all like just continue our lives and it was no big deal. It would be the 80s, but it's not the 80s.
Yeah, good point.
Do you see yourself stay at SNL
for
another 20 years?
Stay forever.
I mean, well,
yeah, I mean,
it seems like you're really enjoying it.
I love it. And it's there's not going to be another job like it. Like, I've had other jobs. Like, I was an actor long before I got there, you know? So I've done the whole hustle of auditioning and this, that, and the other. And, you know, it's just getting back to that is not necessarily that exciting. Mm-hmm. Stability has been a nice kind of thing, or, you know, predictability, you know, if you will, especially for, you know, an actor for hire. Like, it's tough, and especially if you have a family. That's what SNL has, you know, kind of been great for me as. But at the same time, I don't know if I can just stay there forever. Like, there's, you know, room for other people to come behind me and stuff like that. I never felt like I was in the way because the cast is huge right now. You know what I mean? So I don't know how like one person is in the way. But at the same time, you know, you have to allow for growth. And it's not my fault. They keep calling me. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like I'm like.
So you're waiting for that call every summer.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter the fact that you've been there for 21 years. It's you not still official. Don't know if it's going to be 22.
It's not official until it's official. You know what I'm saying?
What date? Is it like mid?
It's like in the summer. So like they give you the summer to stress. Yeah. Like it's like in August or some shit like that.
But so you've been in New York City also then obviously for a long time. What's your relationship to the city? And
now I'm like, you know, people think I'm from here, you know, like I've lived here longer than I lived in my hometown or anywhere else kind of thing. So I've learned it in and out, you know, and like kind of all the states around it, you know what I mean? The boroughs, like I've seen a lot and I love it. You know what I mean? Like what's not to love? There's a lot of individualism. Like it's a one of a kind of place, you know? So as the individual, how do you stand out amongst, you know, millions or whatever? You feel that energy of people just trying to be creative or like climb that mountain of success. If it's not, you know, a generational thing that's going to be passed to you kind of thing.
Yeah. And I see you at the Garden a lot. Knicks, Rangers, you're a big sports fan.
Yeah. I you know, grew up playing football, basketball, baseball, like the big three when, you know, through the 80s or whatever, as far as like driveway games are concerned, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, and then hockey came later once I did the Mighty Ducks or whatever. But I fell in love with hockey. Like I was always aware of it, but it was like kind of like a white thing, you know what I mean? Mm. And you know, there was no like hockey rinks in Georgia that I was aware of. So, yeah, we grew up playing like the warm sports, if you will, warmish.
What was it about hockey that attracted you? Is it the intensity or?
When I was learning about it, when we started doing Mighty Ducks and shit, I couldn't believe they were out there without helmets, number one, back in the day and stuff like that. The Jason mask, I don't think I connected the two dots that was actually the goalie mask because it was so thin. and they didn't cover much. You know what I mean? When like this dude's getting pucks fired and like, you know, Bobby Holt, like this dude's firing shit at you and that's all you have to, yeah. And then like just missing teeth and the fighting, you know, like it's the one sport where everybody just knuckles up. Like that shit's crazy.
Yeah.
So I remember the games that started like putting fighting into the games and stuff like that.
Like EA Sports. Yeah.
And that was great. And then seeing it live and seeing how fast it is and like how it's an onslaught. Yeah.
To me, when I talk to people that maybe didn't grow up watching it or don't watch it at all, you almost have to go watch it live.
Yeah.
That's how you win people over and mm-hmm. they get the feel of the hooked. Intensity in the yeah. building. And
right.
find it maybe a little easier to follow than mm-hmm. watching on TV, but obviously also high quality TV now when you can actually, you see the puck a lot better
sure.
these days than like 20, 25 years ago. I remember coming into the league in 05 and we always break down my games and we watch tape and like 10 years into my career, we went back to look at some old tape and I'm like, I couldn't believe how hard it was to sure. to see the puck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
it's just a little dot out there.
Yeah, it looks yeah, like you're exactly. watching Sega like, NHL 95.
Exactly. What are they chasing?
But I feel like if you get people to come and watch it live, a lot of times they're kind of surprised just how intense it is. And the fans obviously also, especially here in New York, watching mm-hmm. here, it's special.
Yeah. And yeah, you feel more involved once you like really understand what to get excited for. Yeah. Same for me, like watching soccer, like through my daughter's eyes and like finally understanding like, oh, this is an exciting moment building up as yeah. opposed to like, there's just, it looks like a lot of running to me.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you accomplish so much. I think of all the different sketches you've done and it makes me laugh so much. I mm-hmm. love the, especially the sports one. I don't know, the Charles Barkley and
oh yeah.
Oh, coming up here. I was watching it for the 10th time. It's awesome. But I just want to know, is there anything you feel like I want to accomplish that? I haven't reached that area yet. Or you're staying in your lane right now and you want to just continue or?
Oh, no, no, no. I definitely have, you know, more milestones for sure as far as an actor's trajectory is concerned. You know, SNL has just been, you know, a dope chapter that's, you know, a thick one.
Yeah.
But I still want to like do a Bad Boys movie or something that's cool. Like falling to the wayside, shooting at something and saving.
Yeah.
Saving somebody's life or, you know, any of those kind of like making a cool movie kind of yeah. things is concerned or set of movies or whatever. But getting to like producing and stuff like.
Yeah, you have a production
right? company and stuff. Yeah, yeah it's going to be a good one. And I think it has the potential to grow into something very, you know, to be reckoned with, if yeah. you will, kind of thing. I'm proud of like where we are already because just trying to like look out for the actors that like build these things, you know, like I think about. I say this a lot, but I think about, you know, Michael Keaton and Beetlejuice and like,
huh.
he got paid in the 1980s, probably like 30, 40, 50, 100 grand, whatever it was. But it's on Broadway right now and it's got merch and it's doing this, that, and the other. And like,
he hasn't seen it.
He should have a piece, you know, yeah. and it doesn't have to be a big piece, but a small equity. Piece of something that's been making money for 50 years is, you know, it makes a difference yeah. in my opinion. And it seems like that's what's really fair, you know, not just the roll of the dice that you might, you know, get a Julia Roberts moment where you're, you know, whatever that movie was that she made $50 million on the back end, Aaron Brockovich. Yeah, yep. you get like an Aaron Brockovich moment. Not everybody's gonna have that, you know what I mean, right. from the beginning. But if you wind up doing something that does end up blowing up, you know, whatever. Yeah. Everybody should be able to like celebrate in that in a way. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
Well, listen, we really appreciate you coming on the show.
Man.
We're big fans. Keep killing it every
Thank
Saturday.
Thank you, man. Yeah, Thank you, man.
Awesome.
Thank
and, you, man. I look forward to seeing you.
How are you passing the time? Past like yeah. podcasting and stuff, man.
I just enjoy life.
Yeah.
You know, I went from all focus on performance mm-hmm. and try to get better to now it's more about having fun.
Love it.
Have fun, be inspired, make sure I have great people around me. So yeah. a lot of work around the garden, which
That's
I
right.
love. And I think just find that inspiration through different things. Mm-hmm. Hockey gave me so much inspiration, motivation, mm-hmm. passion.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm just looking for different things to, I'm not going to try to match what hockey gave me, but mm-hmm. I'm still looking to feel something, yeah. experience something.
Yeah.
That was a lot of the motivation behind this, which is
mm-hmm.
like, how do you think about the next thing?
Yeah.
Building a next chapter.
Right.
The best way is just to put yourself, collide with
Keenan, mm-hmm. blood with,
yeah.
you know, and start to intersect with all these interesting people.
Yep.
Getting
the party's happening, man. The party's happening, whether you go to it or
especially
not.
Especially in New York. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. like if you can say no to it or yes or whatever, yeah. but if you're not intentional about anything, it kind of passes you by.
Yeah.
And then you're wasting. You're in the best city in the world and I'm
yep.
sitting at home or.
I spent a lot of my first years not going to Broadway, you know, because our schedules don't necessarily coincide, but you do have your Sundays, you know, maybe mm-hmm. you can squeeze it in on Monday. You just have to make an effort kind of thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was mad at myself because they're really, really great, you know, and there's a lot of great things going on out there. You just mm-hmm. gotta
right.
embrace it and try to find something that will intrigue you, like you said, and continue to build you as a person. That's amazing. Cheers to you
yeah.
and your journey, man.
Cheers for coming on.
Cheers,
Ken.
Appreciate
cheers
it.
To you guys. Pleasure. Thanks for the chat. Thank you.
I'll
thank you for the water,
you
sir.
Might be at the game tonight. So
yeah,
I'm
yeah, yeah.
see you there.
Let's get that W, man.
Let's
okay. nah, thanks, boys.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, man.
Thanks,
pleasure.
Man.
Thanks again to Keenan for coming on Club 30. Anything that surprised you?
I don't know about surprise me, but I love hearing about the process, especially yeah. in areas where I know nothing. I know nothing about comedy and I never will. I can appreciate it as a fan, but just hearing his process, how he prepares every week, I thought was really fascinating.
I think the biggest thing for me, you know, he's the veteran. He's been there for 20 years. He's a huge part of SNL. But still, you don't know if you're coming back for the right. next year. That surprised me.
Super stressful. When you think you've earned your keep, right? And paid all of your dues in the
There's
league.
There's still 5-year contracts
right.
here.
Right. You're not signing like a supermax, like,
right.
you know, take you to retirement. There's no real idea of stability in that model. It's like the next funniest guy gets the job. Perfect Club 30
number. I loved it. It yeah. was great.
Me too. He's so humble and so chill. It was just a really nice kind of vibe in here. Another great member for Club 30.
Guys, I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you have a great week. And we'll see you guys soon back here at Club 30.
Yeah. Love you to have you as members. So if you like what you heard or saw, we'd love a like, a subscription, a follow. Welcome you into the Club 30 membership. Thanks again. See you next week.